Welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast, where sales leaders teach you what's working for them and how you can build it yourself.
This episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast is brought to you by our sales coaching and consulting services. Are you looking to create repeatable, scalable, and predictable revenue? We've helped thousands of companies grow their business with tailored expert advice backed by testing to ensure they establish the best practices that'll work for them. Head over to bit.ly/predictable revenue coaching to learn more.
If you run a business, 80% of what happens is outside of your control. Monthly sales, out of your control. Monthly employee fluctuation, not in your control. Supply chain efficiency, also not in your control. I'm your host, Sarah Hicks, and today on the Predictable Revenue Podcast, I'm going to be chatting with an expert about how to increase your return on luck as a business leader. He helps business owners in SaaS and services run their company more effectively, which results in sales that soar. He is trusted by Google, Roche, Resilience Ventures, Amgen, and AbbVie. He created the strategy sprints method that doubles revenue in 90 days by getting owners out of the weeds, and is a TEDx speaker, contributor to Forbes and Entrepreneur Magazine, member of the SVBS Silicon Valley Blockchain Society. Simon Severino, welcome to the Predictable Revenue Podcast.
Hey, Sarah. Hey, everybody. Cool to be here.
Cool. So let's dive into this. I know you've got a kind of framework that you follow, Simon, when you're addressing this problem or trying to get return on in luck. So kind of walk us through what that framework is.
Yeah, so over the last 21 years, I've been doing only one thing, which is coaching business leaders on go-to-market. And the main things that popped up, and this year has just made them stronger, is what do you do when you have zero control about outside stuff, right? Right now, our supply chains are just broken, like for months, for years. So what do we do? And I have brought together the method in form of the book, Strategy Sprints, just to have it right now for everybody when we really need it. Because we, all of us running a business, have these things outside that are just not in our control, volatile markets. What is really in our control if we lead sales, if we run the business? Three things: daily habit, weekly habit, monthly habit. The daily habit is how we spend our time. And so I created a template to write down, this is how I spent my time today. And now let me learn what to delegate tomorrow. Mm-hmm. What will I cut? What will I automate? What will I delegate? And there are two questions on that template that help me and help dozens of clients every day reflect. One is, of all the things that you did today, which one should you delegate tomorrow? And the other one is, if you would live more freely and more intentionally, what would you do? Oh, I wanted to write a book. Oh, I wanted to do this bigger thing. And the weekly habit is get your marketing numbers, sales numbers, and ops numbers in a simple way. Simple dashboard that is fun to use, that people like actually to look at every 7 days and learn from it. This is important for multiple reasons. One is that usually we are not aligned as a team, and it's not fun to work towards a weekly task because most people don't feel the outcome of their weekly tasks or daily tasks. So it's our job as a leader to simplify that, and even I would say to create the conditions for flow and for peak state. So if you think Angry Birds, you do something, you shoot the bird, and then it says 500 points. It does not say in 3 weeks you will get a CRM report with 170 items, and then you can find out your points, right? After half an hour analysis, it says 500 points, and that's the difference. And then you shoot the bird again, it says 600 points. And now how do you feel? You want to shoot for 800. Most people are naturally built that way. Okay, let me shoot it again. Hey, next week we shoot for 1,000. So this is our job as leaders to create, and it's, even if I'm a solopreneur, it's the same thing. It's just that I have three hats on. for a while, hopefully not very long. But it's the same thing. We have to make work repeatable, simple, and fun. Otherwise, it will not work. They will not win. They will not win the week. They will not win the day. And if you don't win the win, if you don't win the week, you don't win probably the month. And if you don't win the month, you're not going to win the quarter. And but your competitors are not sleeping. So that's the weekly habit. Simple dashboard, three marketing numbers, three sales numbers, three operations numbers. And most people don't have that. And that's why they lose focus, they lose alignment, and they don't feel the effect in the right moment of what they're doing. So if I'm doing the website for you, how do I know that I'm done? I can't, unless we have this dashboard together and I see, oh, your overall goals, your marketing goals are to convert that amount of people from an interested person, from a unique visitor to an opt-in on your calendar. Now I can measure it, and now I know if my work of designing your website is done or not, if I'm a marketing team member of yours, right? If I don't have that, I don't even know if my work is done. And I don't know if it's working. And that's the basis for me to really stay in this peak state, because I need something telling me, all right, this is not working. Try something else. Oh, this is working. Do more of that. Mm-hmm. That's the loop that we need for teams to be in flow. It's the weekly habit. The monthly habit, are we running in the right direction at the right pace? What is competition doing? Which of our features are really winning and which are losing against competitors? How much do we cut from those costs where we're losing so that we reinvest them next month in innovating the ones that work already? Because if you cut just 10% every month from the things that are not working and you put them in the things that where you are already winning, then you're going to crush it. It's so simple, but you need a process to do that. You need this. We have the monthly habit. And so these are the three things when nothing is really in your control. These are the three things that are always in your control. And they will make sure that you know early if something's happening outside. You can't control it, but you can be early in recognizing the weak signals so that you have time enough to do something about it.
Absolutely. I have a question on two questions. So on the weekly habits, when you're mentioning making sure that you have those really clear, concise KPIs that you've got right in front of your face so that you can see what's going on, how do you recommend kind of setting that up in terms of a dashboard? Like, are we looking for people that also get kind of a ping to their Slack to say like, hey, this has been updated in your dashboard? How do we get that sort of instant gratification like Angry Birds, but Salesforce or whatever it might be?
Yes. So the dashboard is very simple, and we have already built it. It's a simple spreadsheet with three visual things. You just see the numbers and target and current and the gap, and it's just visual and simple. And every 7 days, the whole team, somebody from marketing, from operations, from sales, and from management, looks at it, learns from it. It's a one-hour meeting, pretty straightforward. And it should be simple. And it should not be tagged to 100,000 things. There is one link only to the number itself, so that the person who extrapolates the report has just 2 minutes of work. Mm-hmm. And we want it manual. We want it manual because you put attention onto it. That's why it's a spreadsheet. And it works everywhere. A spreadsheet works in every context with every team of one, team of 7,000. Spreadsheet always works. And the other loops, they are on the task level. Yes, absolutely. So we help our clients in have tagging things. So of course, it's awful to have emails in the team. So you don't have to send emails to your own colleagues. Please, if you are doing it, stop sending emails to your colleagues. you can create something like a Slack group, a Discord group, something that is much more dynamic and fun. And you can tag everything in there. So we have a Slack group. There is a sales channel. And right now, I'm looking at it, and it says, boom, this person, this phone number just downloaded the tool from your website. And it says which tool. So somebody from our sales team can call them now. Mm-hmm. These are important real-time loops. Other real-time loops are less important. You shouldn't be pinged by that. But if they are relevant and if they are time-sensitive, so in sales, those things are time-sensitive, because if somebody of our team, as your audience knows, if somebody of our team calls them in the next 2 hours, it's a much higher chance of converting them than if we call them in a week. So the time sensitive things, yes, and that is real time. And we have also in our sales team different time zones. So somebody in all time zones, or somebody will take it in the right moment. Yeah. So these things, yes. And we have the technology. There is so much cool software popping up every week that can be used for that.
Yeah, for sure. And then another question on the monthly habits. So you mentioned you take a look at the month previous and you make a change. You pivot away from something that wasn't working and you reallocate those funds, those resources towards something that is working. I suppose my question would be, how do you know, I suppose, when you've experimented with something enough, like how do you kind of look back and say, okay, now is the time to move versus saying like, no, we don't have enough data on that. Keep it going. What's the process there?
Oh, that's a great question. And there are many hints of that on the product level. For example, all these methods of prototyping and testing prototypes, they have taught us much about it. So always write down your assumption. You always have an assumption. I think if we do this, this is going to happen. Right. And so if you think of how Elon Musk built the company Tesla, he was always prototyping and making it small. How can I make it small? How can I make it small? What's the smallest I can build? He never builds a car. He first builds a landing page with just an image, a fake image. It's just, you know, a red sports car, but it's totally smart in terms of energy consumption. Would you spend 25K for it? Send the 25K now. Maybe I build it later. That's a prototype. Instead of building it, he's just testing it. And he sets a time, maybe 14 days, and he sets a number. If more than 200 people buy it, I'm going to build it. That's a simple form of experimenting with something that is quite complex. Building a car is a very complex task, very expensive. Takes a ton of time and material. But he found a way, a very quick, very agile way of testing it. So, because you write down your assumption, you create something that is not the product itself, but it's enough to test if it's true, if there is market traction, if people have skin in the game, if they really want it, take it, pay for it. It's not enough to hear, yes, I would buy it. And it's also not enough if they pay like minus 75% for it. It must be around at least 85% of the final price, of the real price. And then you know it. And then you know, yeah, this is validated, or no, this assumption is not validated. And you can do that in 1 hour with $100. Tim Ferriss tested the title of his book. Which title should I give my book? $100, 3 Google ad campaigns, mini campaigns, and one had more click than the other two. It was the 4 hours work week. And it became a bestseller because he tested it with $100 in a couple hours.
Interesting.
That's how you do it. You write down the assumption and you invalidate. You go for invalidation, not for validation. You go for invalidation. But if the numbers tell you that's working, then it is working. Then stay on it.
Okay, very cool. Okay, great. So you've got your daily your weekly and your monthly habits. You're simplifying the way that you kind of look at everything there and giving yourself those repeatable tasks in those time frames. What's next in terms of capitalizing on luck?
It's really execution. So you have your core operating model, daily habit, weekly habit, monthly habit. And the rest is really only weekly identifying of your bottleneck. It takes 8 minutes to identify the bottleneck. You ask a question, for example, if you 10x the number of clients next week that you take on, which part of your business breaks first? And then you think of your business as being in the fundamental stages, awareness stage, engagement, ready to buy, closing, delivering, retaining, cross-selling, upselling, referral. If you just map it out on one page and ask yourself that this 10x question, then you find immediately what's breaking. Oh, we can onboard them. Week zero works, but then week one breaks. We cannot deliver in week one because we're not enough people. Then you have now your current bottleneck of this week. So you either change the business model or you add people. And you will probably change the business model if you really want to scale. And so you will find smarter way to deliver that are more scalable. For example, I went from myself being the consultant to firing myself from operation, changing the business model to a franchise style like McDonald's. And now I have certified strategy sprints, coaches around the globe who do the coaching. That was for me the work. And it took me a couple of weeks to thinking about it and then testing it, and it worked. To really change the business model. And the exercise, the weekly exercise, what's the current bottleneck? 8 minutes is what you need to find your bottleneck. We have even a checklist for that if you want to do it. Because otherwise it takes usually more than 8 minutes if people do it without us. But there is a checklist on our website, strategysprints.com. You can identify your bottleneck in 8 minutes. And then this is what the team does this week. Again, peak flow state. Whole team looks at one task. This bottleneck, that's what we solve. Marketing, sales, operations. We solve one thing. And then you do it. And when it's solved, you pick the next bottleneck and improve. And there is always a bottleneck. It's a never ending. It's always the weakest part of the throughput overall chain.
Yeah, absolutely. That makes sense. So when you're, maybe give us a couple of those points that you'd cover in that checklist when you're looking to kind of brainstorm how you might tackle that bottleneck or find that bottleneck.
Yeah, it's really, you divide by stages. You think it from the customer perspective, where they are. And if you maximize it, which is the part that breaks? And it might be the delivery. It might be it's from marketing to sales, for example. We have 7,000 views this week, unique visitors, but just 15 opt-ins and only 2 discovery calls booked on the closer's calendar. So now we might want to look at that landing page and what is exactly going on that we lose all these possible opt-ins. And when the on that landing page, again, the assumption, is it the copy? Is it the button? Is it the user experience? Is the button contrast not enough? Is the words on the button are not animating you to do something? The copy is not animating you to do something. Which part is it? Is it a technical? Is it a creative problem? And again, you solve that bottleneck and you move on to the next. But the numbers will always tell you if you solve that bottleneck or not.
Yeah, absolutely. And at what point do you think, if there is a point in a business's growth or in a business's kind of scaling journey, does the business ever get to a point where it's too large for kind of everybody to come in and focus on that issue and move through the bottlenecks? Or is it always something effective, but most companies just aren't doing it right now and aren't actually dedicating all the resources to solving the one glaring issue?
Yeah, the wonderful thing, and you can learn that from nature or from systems, is that every system can be broken down in fractals. So you have the whole system, which at some point is huge. But then each part is a fractal of the whole. So you can organize work in fractals, in teams of teams. And then each fractal organizes itself in weekly sprint. Mm-hmm. That's really how to do it. You need the same structure that you have on the team level. The team is just the smallest unit of the whole thing. But you can organize it in fractals that have the same structure, the same KPIs, the same reporting cadence, and the same vision. We like to write the vision in 3 years. So 3 years from now, and then we really describe it on detail. And then everybody has that vision and everybody organizes with the same operating principles. Mm-hmm. Everybody does the daily flow, the daily habit. Everybody does it, from the assistant to the CEO. Everybody's doing it. Weekly habit. Every single unit does the weekly 1 hour meeting and they go through their dashboard. And you break down parent goals to your sub goals, like an OKR system. It's just in smaller chunks because you go over it weekly.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. That makes sense. So basically you're behaving like that early team, except you're just a little subunit of that larger system once the company gets to a certain size, but each business unit is like their own focused, unit looking to solve their own issues or bottlenecks within their subunit. Okay. Yeah. Got it. I know that you have a kind of framework or a strategy for reducing sales cycles and kind of increasing sales frequency and that sort of thing. So talk to me about that a little bit.
Yeah, many people ask us, wow, I see on your website you're doubling revenue in 90 days, but how is that possible? Because 90 days, they go so fast. How can you double? Mm-hmm. And we show them the simple acupuncture points that we're doing since 21 years. And it's pretty straightforward. So if sales acceleration is your goal, focus for the next 90 days on just three things and deprioritize for now. Stop doing everything that does not contribute to increasing by 25% these three things. 25% up in sales conversions from existing conversations. 25% up in frequency of the sales in terms of reducing sales time from awareness to closing, and increasing by 25% what you charge for the same thing by improving the positioning of the thing. People never buy the thing, they buy always the value that they attribute to the thing. Mm-hmm. So it's a perception of value. And how do you pre-frame, influence this perception? With exactly 8 acupuncture points that it takes around 5 days for us to do with people. And one is, for example, having client testimonials in a helpful way. Like, for example, this is one way that we help our clients do it, is they will have, wherever they are, here I can show Sunny, one of our clients, what he did in 90 days and what came out, right? Mm-hmm. So his sales went through the roof, and you have a name, and you have his role, and you can show it. Like, and I have Anthony, and I have John, and I have Jaime, and Chanel, and Adam, and I can quickly show them. So that's the pre-work, is having those client testimonials in a specific way that is helpful. Oh yeah, I can relate. Oh, I'm in the same role. Oh, I need this. Mm. And this is one of those 8 things that we need to do. As soon as we have those 8 things, you can increase the price by 25% without losing any sales, actually, yeah, by keeping the same conversion rate. Then we look at the conversion rate. How do you increase the conversion rate by 25%? We have our clients record their Zoom sales calls, upload them. We have a 24/7 project management system together. It works on their phone. They just upload it. And then the sprint coach, they tag their coach. It's like Spider-Man and his guy in the chair. What should I do? Should I kick the left door or the right door? Give me a minute. Tick, 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 tick. Kick the left door. So they upload it. And then the sprint coach goes, minute 5. When you said this word, look at their body language. Minute 11. You said the price and then you kind of mumbled. You said, it's $25,000. How much? $25. Are you ashamed of the price? Say the price this way. Say it's $25,000 up front. And then silence for 15 seconds. It's Obama-style silence, 15 seconds. And you have to train that. It's one example, right, of a very small thing. But it's really relevant. These are the small things that make the difference in the closing conversation. And it's customized. We see their recording. We look at the body language, at the words. And usually then from there, we go back to the sales script, improve the sales script accordingly, make sure it doesn't feel like a script, of course. It must be a natural conversation. But it is informed by the role plays. We make role plays with them, ABC role plays. You play the client, I play the closer. There is an observer. And then we exchange roles and we learn from that. And these are things that we do to increase the sales conversion rate. And yeah, these are the inflection points. And by having a sprint coach on your side, it keeps you accountable. You don't want to come to the weekly meeting with your coach and not have sold anything. It becomes easier to be successful when you're in a sprint than to not be successful, because it's the momentum of the program, of the relationship to your coach.
Right, absolutely. And kind of the focus on the one thing and being able to take all the other invaluable tasks out of it. Yeah,
exactly.
Okay, very interesting. So, okay, great kind of examples on how to increase sales frequency, sales efficiency, which is, of course, one very valuable kind of part of that customer journey. But you mentioned that you do work with a lot of kind of product teams and teams in general. So tell me how you work to kind of increase team output or team efficiency when working towards whether that's a product or service goal.
Yeah, so what are the main inflection points of a team? It's when they don't trust each other, when they don't have conflicts with each other in the right way and the right in the right intensity for them, when they don't have accountability and when they don't have clarity of task and when they don't have results. These are the five things that a team needs to have high performance. And so these things are all baked in. We just touched on many of them. We just didn't call them that way. But if you think just the weekly habit is exactly that, because they have to come together every 7 days. So accountability is, of course, always in the room. Whatever you are talking, who's accountable, who's not accountable. Can I trust you? I cannot trust you. Can I trust the process? Can I trust the product? You are discussing all these things automatically by looking at the numbers and by talking about the numbers. The next thing is that automatically you will have conflicts. And this is good. We want some conflicts. We want the conflict between the marketing team and the sales team. Even if it's just you and you are a solopreneur, you have different roles. In marketing, the goal is to get people, hello, here I am. I'm cool. Let's start talking. And in sales, the goal is, all right, let's intensify this. Let's become business partners. Let's get stuff done here. Let's intensify, right? Wire over the money. That's a different task. And so there is a conflict there. Mm-hmm. And that's important to have that conflict if you want, because sometimes, you know, marketing does what's fun in marketing, but it has no sales relevance. And then sales sells the sky and promises too much. And then operations cannot deliver. And so I want the conflict between sales and operation in the room. And I want this to be a positive conflict, to be short, be very clear. You don't sell that anymore because that cannot deliver. And then they have to find a common ground. Okay, what do we do? How much do we promise? Maybe we can deliver a little bit more. Maybe you can promise a little bit less. Mm-hmm. And then they align. That's a good conflict. And then not just that, having clear tasks, but also seeing the results of the tasks. You basically are always working on these five levels of high-performance teams just by having this weekly dashboard. And because I have also studied psychology, I know that however cool the tool is, people will just not use it. If you tell them, do this, they just don't do it. Everybody who has kids knows they just do it. People don't want to do what you tell them to do. They want to do what's in flow for them, what's true for them, what's right for them. And so we let them just do, but the templates support very specific conversations in a very specific cadence. This way, you have full freedom for everybody, but you make sure that some conversations happen in the right cadence. And I think that's a good mix.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned a couple of things there that I want to dig into a little bit more. So some of that was around kind of team characteristics, team dynamics, all of that kind of stuff. And like you mentioned, giving them a way to collaborate, communicate very easily with both the people kind of within the team and then people that they're working with cross-functionally. Do you see a kind of a team size that generally is more effective than others, or a team makeup in terms of, you know, seniority and power distance and all of that stuff that works best?
Yes. So after 21 years, we have defined the sprint team as to be four people plus their coach. And it's a very specific team of four. So there must be in there the owner of that business or product or country. Then, so it's basically the decider, right? You want every this decision to be made in the sprint and not to have a follow-up meeting where we will talk with that. And if they say yes, then we talk to them and then we come back. No, the sprint decides in the sprint. That's why the decider is one hour per week in the sprint. Plus one person from sales, one person from marketing, and one person from operations. Because we want to trigger those alignment, we want to trigger those positive conflicts that will pop up. We want to make sure that everybody knows, like in a basketball team, I know where the goal is. I see it in front of me. It's there. This is what we want to do. 2 points or 3 points there. And it's also clear, what are you doing? What am I doing? Where are you right now? So we know exactly who's doing what. And when you have that simplification, visualization of things, now your team has the chance for flow and for even having fun, because we have simplified things. They are now pretty clear, pretty straightforward. Now we can have fun. Now it's like playing basketball. It's not like, oh, I have to go to work. I sit on my desk. I do specific fake rituals. No, come on. Here's what we're going to do. Come on, guys. Let's do it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, cool. And that was the next kind of question I was going to be, how do you then work cross-functionally with the leaders of different orgs, but they're in the sprint team too. So that absolutely makes sense.
By making sure that the tough conversations happen often in a positive way, often, but very clear.
Yeah, I think that's very interesting and obviously very different from what a lot of companies do when they just sort of grow organically and become these, you know, silos that have their own goals. Although the company does have one goal, not everybody is working towards that with every activity or every kind of goal that they hit. It's definitely not always working towards that 3-year goal, like you mentioned.
And now imagine you're playing basket with your friends. And now one of those says, hey, why didn't you give me the ball? I was there. And I go, yeah, but I am defense. I don't play with you. No, I'm defense. I'm another department, right? But come on, how can we win if everybody thinks department optimization? It's not possible to win.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Okay, very cool. And now kind of wrapping this up after we've kind of walked through building these habits from start to finish, now that you've coached over 1,000, well over 1,500 companies doing or teams doing this sort of thing, and you've seen the impact that it's made. Tell me about those characteristics of the most resilient teams, the strongest teams that you've worked with.
Let me tell you the story of a solopreneur, because that's really tough when you are solo. Wow, that's tough. And so his name is Anthony. And after the sprint, he became a friend and he wrote even the foreword to the book. Mm. So he is a sales master. Anthony Iannarino is one of the persons who probably many know him here in the audience, because he's one of the people you call when you need your sales team trained to close more deals. He is the trainer in B2B sales. And so when the NASDAQ needs better sales, they call Anthony. But Anthony has now a well-running business, and he's doing everything alone. He's the marketing department, the sales department, the operations department. What happens when Anthony goes on holidays? So he's always solving the problems of other people. Who solves his problems? He has something that is completely dependent on him. And so when he saw the sprint, he said, what if we organize it in a way that is less dependent from me? And so we started doing exactly that, mapping out from the customer perspective what they need, what they get, simplifying everything, measuring each stage in between, and then improving each stage in between. Now that we had working systems, because now it was systemized, now he could start hiring people. Fast forward 90 days later, he has now clear roles, a business that runs less dependent on him. He can do whatever he wants. He now enjoys running a business again. And, you know, he has time for doing stuff that is in his zone of genius. He just published the next book because his zone of genius is writing, speaking on stages, delivering those trainings on a very, very high level for high impact brands. And that's what he does now. And the rest has systems in place. So it works. They report to him and it works like a charm. And he can focus on why initially he started his business, because he loves really training people in sales and sharing the knowledge. He calls it commercial teaching, right? He teaches people how to do stuff. Mm-hmm. And his books are amazing. And his business is running really well. That's an example of a solopreneur. And a solopreneur is the toughest situation to be in, especially in a volatile market like this one. It's super tough, 100 moving parts. If you do it without blueprints, it's highly improbable that you will succeed. It's highly improbable that you will be around in 5 years. But with these blueprints and with a sprint coach, it was much simpler. And he could really focus. He was doing every day 1 hour on improving one part of the business. And after 90 days, he felt really, really much better. He had a team. The team was happy. And he was obviously happier because now you have a machine that's running and you do the parts that you enjoy doing.
Very cool. Well, if people are listening to us today, they've heard all of the things that they can do and all of the pieces that they should put in place. What's the very first thing that somebody should action today to get started in their kind of journey of following this type of sprint method?
They can go onto our website, strategysprints.com, and many of the tools, the weekly habit, daily habit, etc., they are open source. So they can start using a couple of them. And if they find that helpful, then they can hop on a call with us and see, maybe get a demo and see what a sprint can do for them and if it's the right thing for them for scaling and for regaining their time and then doubling their revenue. But the first step is really just try one of those tools and see if they're helpful, strategysprints.com. And there's also the book on Amazon, Strategy Sprints, with the foreword by Anthony Iannarino. And it's really it's really something that I have on my desk and I use it. If my marketing is not working, I go to chapter 3 marketing. Well, wait a moment, what did I miss? What did I forget? And it's my checklist. It's, oh, I didn't do look step 6. I just skipped it. I thought I can just skip it, and now it's not working. And the same thing with sales. My sales is not working. I go to chapter 4. And what am I missing? And it's the same thing. Usually I skip steps because I think I can shortcut. And then, oh no, it doesn't work. Okay, back to start, Simon. Use your own checklist and then it works.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, we'll make sure to point people, towards your resources and towards the book as well. But it was an absolute pleasure having you on the show. Very, very interesting stuff. I love all the concepts that you've walked us through, and I'm sure they're going to create a ton of value for our audience. If people do want to learn more from you specifically, if they want to get in touch with you, is there a way that they can do that?
I am every day on YouTube. My channel is called Simon Severino, and we can have a conversation there in the comments. Let me know what you need. I'm happy to make a video about it.
Cool. Well, thank you so much again for joining us. It was a real pleasure having you on the podcast.
Thank you so much, Sarah. Thank you, everybody. Keep rolling.
Yeah, and thank you to all of you for joining us for another episode of the Predictable Revenue Podcast. Please, if you haven't already, hit the subscribe button on YouTube so that you can be notified each week. We have wonderful guests like Simon Seferino joining us and teaching us all the ins and outs of sales, marketing, growth, all of that good stuff. We'll catch you again next time.